because hockey hasn't completely taken over your life yet. Subscribe to Podcasts of Hockey Central at Noon through iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Put down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Friday on Hockey Central at Noon, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet. It all starts from Sportsnet 590 The Fan and then goes from there. Radio stations across Canada, TV stations, and Sportsnet. We're on 360 today, as well as the NHL Network in the United States, Darren Millard, along with Gord Stellick and Scott Morrison. Tonight we have Vancouver at home to Arizona on Sportsnet Pacific as we go into the weekend, a Hall of Fame weekend. You guys are both very familiar with that. Scotty Morrison, a member of the writers' wing, and Gord Stellick, you've been to the hall before.
I've been to the hall, and I think the broadcast wing probably 2019 or something, maybe 20. I don't know. After Damian gets in, and you
do you campaign for that?
Oh, do I?
Yeah.
No, I think I don't know. It's an interesting mix. Hey, okay, you know what? As far as the some people campaign.
Yes, he does.
Some people no, I don't care. But it's an interesting imperfect science, even though the Hall of Famers are certainly this year justly being rewarded and that. But as far as builders go and other things, there are guys that campaign, and whether they deserve to get in or not, they campaign because you got to get someone to make a case for you.
Who are the media members going in this year?
Well, Kevin Allen is the writer from USA Today and a great selection. Been covering hockey for so many years and been one of the guys that's just been a champion of the cause, if you will,
absolutely,
for the game south of the border, and done a tremendous job of it based out of the Detroit area. And Pat Foley, the longtime voice of the Chicago Blackhawks, is the broadcaster.
And Kevin Allen, when do I have this right? USA Today, right?
Yeah.
Because and also Rod Beaton was another guy. Mm-hmm. Just but
and
when
he took over from Rod, when Rod the late Rod Beaton, who was a passionate hockey fan,
and that was the great thing about USA Today. Really hopped on hockey in a big way when it wasn't mainstream in the United States. Like, it was same with Larry Wiggy with the Sporting News, right? Just a couple of those publications that went big on hockey when hockey wasn't as cool.
Darren Millard along with Gord Stellick and Scott Morrison. Don't forget the Hockey Central Saturday comes your way tomorrow. Sportsnet 360, 5-6. That's Hockey Central Saturday with Jeff Merrick.
Just to get back to the Hall of Fame, like, it's a Monday, well, the Hall of Fame game is tonight, obviously, Pittsburgh and Toronto, but it's a fabulous weekend, too.
There's
for people who are in the area, there's a lot more to it than just the induction on Monday night. There's a fabulous luncheon that, you know, it's not open to the public that has the media representatives on Monday, but you still host the forum down at the Hall of Fame?
No, because a rival network's involved, so I had done it. I just did it the fan forum, which was the best part. Just the guys chit chatting. Oh yeah, yeah. So if you go down,
and there's the game on
Sunday, the
afternoon.
Legends game.
Yeah.
So, but if you go to the Hall this weekend,
network politics.
It's great.
Network politics.
We wouldn't call politics. Someone else
cost you your gig.
Yeah, that's right. Not network sponsorship cost me my gig. Yeah, that's
politics,
right. After 15 years.
Same thing.
It was neat. Started with Wayne Gretzky on the fan forum, and he sat down in a comfy chair with 500 people, and it was like he was in your den. It was like Wayne's World. It was like he was in your den. It was amazing. So we've done that, or they've done it for so
were
many
they
years
like the
since.
Strombo chairs you were in there?
They were in the Strombo chairs, okay. Yeah.
There you go.
And then we would do the Strombo stand-up sometimes, too. We did a little bit of it, mixed it up, but the whole point was being comfortable.
Yeah.
And that was some of the nice parts. So it is a great weekend. And just even down at practice this morning, seeing the Penguins and Leafs, and there's Boreas Salming. He's going to collect his old age pension next year. He's 63, 64. He looks like the Swedish James Bond still.
Wow.
Looks fabulous. But, I mean, those are the guys that will be out there tonight on the ice.
You can't be two ages at once.
Oh, he's going to be 63. Then after that, he turns 64.
Oh.
So he's one of those two. So if he's 63, he'll be 64 soon. If he's 64, he already is 64 and will be 65 next.
And what a stellar class being inducted this year as well. When you think about, you know, Forsberg and Pat Burns and
Hasek
and
Modano. International,
Rob Blake.
International cast.
And
how
Bill
about
McCreary.
That?
And Bill McCreary, yeah. Kudos to Bill, one of the great guys
we had,
in the game and a great official.
We had Peter Forsberg on the show yesterday, and I've interviewed him a couple of times, but never one-on-one, always in scrums.
Well, it wasn't easy to get the Colorado guys.
Good point. That they were well protected.
Yes.
He was an absolute joy to talk to. He was fun.
Is he still managing the team in Sweden or being involved? Like he
it was a Modo, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a whole different guy now. He's retired. I had him once, the same thing. I couldn't believe it. I said, why was this guy not on more often?
He was giving Doug shots left, right, and center.
That's worth the price of admission right there.
That's how we ended it.
What a trade, though, eh? We think of Forsberg and Lindros, both turned out to be superstar players. And one's going into the Hall, the other should be going into the Hall. Mm-hmm.
It would have been great if they went in together, wouldn't it?
Oh, fabulous.
You know, you talk about do guys lobby to get in as a writer, a broadcaster, a builder, or player. Do you think Eric cares? I get the feeling like he will go in the Hall.
I think so.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, I think he should, but I don't think he's a guy that lobbies. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of ridiculous he's not in all honesty. But I think he's another guy like Forsberg that actually his personality's really evolved and softened and broadened when it's over. Because these guys, I mean, him in particular, God, he was the face of the league and everything and Flyers.
He's a dominant player, MVP, took his team to the final. They didn't win, but that happens. And did he have the longevity? No, but there's other players that have gotten into the Hall of Fame that didn't have the years. But he was the best player for many of the years that he played.
He was always a guy that, on the subject of being guarded, was so tough to get through that wall when you interviewed him.
Yeah,
but once you got to know him, if you got into that circle at all, he was a totally different guy. Like it was almost hard to recognize the difference between Eric the player and Eric the dude.
Well, and when you're in it. Like him there, or anyone playing in the, there's a siege mentality. Mm-hmm. There just is. It's us against the world and those types of things. And the other part now, when you get out, you get perspective and you get all those when you're retired. He's a guy, I certainly wasn't in his inner circle or anywhere close, but I've done some events with him since. And it's very genuine. Like a lot of people are kind of cynical because they remember those days, but he's very charitable, very involved, very, very personable.
No, absolutely. And I mean, the circumstances of him coming into the league were very different than most players for a lot of different reasons. But to your point, yeah, I mean, he's a tremendous guy when you get to know him. And I was involved with an event a week ago with Eric for Easter Seals, mm-hmm. raised over $200,000 in a charity hockey mm-hmm. tournament. So he's been very generous with his time.
And he got married in Montreal. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they talk about he was never anti-Quebec. He was anti-Marcel Aubu as far as going to that organization. So, you know, that perception was there. And actually his wedding about a year ago or 2 years ago, and there's a picture of him with a Montreal Canadian jersey on. I guess the father-in-law or someone got him to do it as kind of a ruse, whatever, and he went along with it.
Hey, so, Scotty, you're in the media section. A lot of people, Twitter or whatever, make point of that the broadcasters and the writers aren't actually Hall of Fame members. Who cares? You're in it. Mm-hmm. I've always been of that belief. But how cool is it to walk in that thing, that grand hall? And
it's very cool. I mean, I was fortunate enough that in 2006, when I was honored, that the ceremony was still done in the grand hall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to where they had to, because it's gotten so large now, they've moved it upstairs into the atrium of the bigger building. And it was fabulous. And I remember Mark, my son, and Kathy, my late wife, we were sitting there in the front row, and Daryl Sutter was sitting in behind us, and he was sitting flicking Mark's ear all night, just keeping him amused. And he still talks about that. He sees Daryl Sutter. But, I mean, you walk in there, and the first time that I walked in afterwards to see your plaque on the wall in that room, and I had my son with me, it's pretty powerful and pretty emotional. And you see the names, you see the trophies, and you feel the history. And whatever distinction that we're given, you're still being honored in that room and to be part of that group and to be honored by your coworkers and other people in the hockey community. It's kind of a breathtaking moment, to say the least. It's very, very powerful and humbling.
Hockey Central at noon with Scott Morrison, Gordy Stelick. I'm Darren Millard. Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch coming up later on in this program. A great piece this week on Nathan Horton and his health and where he's going with his future and his career. if that's anywhere at all. So it's come to a crossroads for Nathan Horton, and he'll bring us up to date. Columbus Blue Jackets going through a real tough ride right now, obviously with all their injuries. Last night, the Boston Bruins, who had it going in such a great direction without Zdeno Chara, it's just completely caved in on them. So Boston is drilled by Toronto, and then they get tamed by the Montreal Canadiens.
You know, after the Toronto game, Joe Haggerty came on our show, and he was saying, he said, I expected this the October 25th game when they played the Leafs, right? That was the first game after Zdeno Chara got hurt, and they played great. Leafs did in that particular game, and the Bruins went on a nice little tear. And you wondered, said, boy, Zdeno Chara is as preeminent a shutdown defenseman that he plays the serious minutes. And if you're Phil Kessel or any other best winger on an NHL team, that's all you see. He's trained to come off like Pavlov's dogs on the ice when you're on the ice. And that's what he's done. And so for the Bruins probably testing their depth, it was a real positive that way. And then a lot of people thought the Toronto game, maybe they were looking ahead to the Montreal game, but instead they got another same thing they got in Toronto. It hasn't been a very good Canadian sojourn.
No, not at all. Outscored 11-2 in the two games. And just when it seemed like, you know, they won 5 in a row going into that Leaf game, and their overall record, their play was so much better. And, you know, remember we had Peter Chiarelli on the show mm-hmm. earlier in the season. One of the things he talked about, not making excuses, they had injuries. They had to trade some depth off their blue line, which to get to the cap and all of that ramification. And then they had a bunch of players who also were coming off summers of rehab as opposed to summers of training, and it was taking them a little bit of time to find their way. So it'd be interesting to hear what Claude Julien has to say about what these last 2 days have been all about, whether it speaks to maybe, you know, they're a good team, but maybe they're not a great team, and they are vulnerable, and, you know, Chara is a big part of it, but there's still a lot of talent on that team, and it's puzzling, and it's really puzzling going into Montreal. It's one thing to let it happen here, and maybe you do look ahead, but puzzling going into Montreal with the storylines that existed after what happened in the playoffs and the Dale Weiss and Lucic and all that sort of stuff, that they would be that flat.
And how about PK giving him a shot?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was whatever. It was like the movie Walking Tall or something. I mean, this is our building, and not only Dale Weiss be a guy that starred in the game, and we'll talk about that later, but, you know, just PK with the cross. I think Lucic
No, I'm not sure
stud.
That PK wanted, I don't think he
no,
wanted
I don't
it
think,
to go
but
anywhere, any further than what it went with the cross check and what happened, but
well, Lucic is
no
win guy
back there.
No, well, it's a no win thing for Lucic,
yeah.
Really. And I wonder if I was talking about with Joe Haggerty that the negative pushback that Lucic got about the handshake, you know, just the world about bullying and all that kind of stuff, that if that's not played on his mind a little bit, that if he's not taking like a couple of steamboats thinking in his mind before he engages where he might just engage instinctively.
This has been a really interesting first quarter of the season for Canadian teams, especially coming off the playoff where there was only one club from north of the border that qualified for the Stanley Cup postseason, and that being the Montreal Canadiens, who reached the Eastern Conference Final. Then you look at what's happening, edging up on the 20-game mark, and there's 6 of 7 Canadian teams who are in a playoff spot right now, who are in Calgary's angle, overachieving, in Montreal's point of view, meeting expectations, not playing great, but we thought that they were Canada's best team coming into the, maybe we didn't expect them to win the Atlantic Division, but certainly a playoff team. It's been a uplifting, motivating first quarter.
Well, I find it, and I know we're not just a Canadian only show any means, but I mean, I think here in Canada, that you are still passionate about your team. So say it's the Leafs or say it's the Canadiens, and you want them to kick the crap out of the Canadiens or anybody else. But we've sort of been of the mind that we want our team in the playoffs, but we also want those other teams in the playoffs too. You know what I mean? Just sort of because we know with the dollar now sliding a bit, just some of the trials and tribulations. So you actually are pulling.
It was up 0.4 this morning.
Well, you're actually pulling for the other other guys to get in as well.
Thanks for the business desk.
Yeah, what about, can you check a few stocks for me? Anyway, and you're right, 6 out of 7 are close or in it at that point. Last year, just one. Stanley Cup hasn't been won since 1993 against Montreal. And it'd be nice to see those teams and reward some of the fans, like the fans in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. It'd be nice to see them get some playoff action.
Winnipeg wins again last night. Michael Hutchison, goes in for Andre Pavlich, spells him off, and he gets a victory over the Carolina Hurricanes. Blake Wheeler was great in that one. Mark Giordano was outstanding for Calgary, as usual. And Los Angeles loses to Dallas.
I just wanted to say, you look at some of those, just before we move on to that, the Canadian records, you look at Vancouver, 8-2, their last 10. Calgary, 6-3-1, and played a ton of road games. Winnipeg, 7-1-2. Toronto, 7-2-1. Like, it's not like they've just been hovering.
Yeah.
They're playing real, real well.
Yeah, the Toronto Maple Leafs knocking on the door for their 10th win. They've got a back-to-back. Jonathan Bernier will start tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and we know what Pittsburgh did to Toronto earlier this year, and there's a Pittsburgh team that there's transitions. We talk about this getting used to a new system mentality that teams go through. But when you look at clubs like Vancouver, new coach, flying out of the gate right now. You look at Pittsburgh, new coach, flying out of the gate. Nashville, new coach, 10 wins in 16 games. So why is it different for those clubs? Why is there a lack of a learning curve there?
Well, you know, it's funny. In Vancouver's case, I look at that they got rid of distractions. And they got rid of the goaltending distraction a year ago and got it, I guess, for the first time with Ryan Miller. There's no real distraction start of the year. You move Kessler, you get good value back in Bonino and company, so you make a good trade that way. And you're also being vigilant about the Sedins, that guys like Bieksa and that will more willing to stick their nose in about, because they're the guys that kind of get abused on the ice, the little crap that they get away with. Then on the separate thing, Pittsburgh, they're supposed to have won 3 Stanley Cups by now, right? I mean, when Sidney Crosby came back, they were awarded the Stanley Cup that year before they had to actually play for it and got eliminated. And now you had to try some kind of new kind of system. They're all a little bit different. And well, Nashville, same thing.
And none of them are rebuilds. They're just retools. So in Vancouver, it's a culture change. Clearly, that was a big impact of what they did off the ice. Refreshed a lot of people there, and give them credit because they made good off-season moves that helped, like Verbata going on the line with the Twins. Bonino, as you mentioned, making the most of that deal. And a lot of things that Jim Benning did in the off-season have helped to improve that team. You look at Nashville, and even though everybody's saying, you know, they play a little more of an aggressive offensive game and a more entertaining game, the foundation was still there, is that they got an all-world goaltender who's healthy and an all-world defense, and they can shut you down and close the door. So a lot of it was fine-tuning, and Pittsburgh was, to your point, was still a very good hockey team that's just playing a little bit differently and more of a puck possession team, that type of thing.
One pleasant surprise is Winnipeg's D. That's a real, you know, Paul Maurice came in last year and did a solid job helping right the ship, so to speak. And, wow, I mean, I know they've been getting excellent goaltending, but I never saw that in their style of play and to be able to win like they have.
But I derailed you. You were going down the road of Dallas, L.A.
Well, that's okay. You're sitting in the chair of derailment.
Well, there you go.
You're stepping
it's in
up
the
and
air.
You're performing.
Yeah, but you try to get it back on the tracks.
I didn't scream at you.
No, you didn't. You didn't chuck anything at me. Finish the subject of Winnipeg. I'm concerned as a follower of that team whether or not they can continue this with the lack of goal production. Well, that's 33 goals.
Well, didn't I just say that about the defense? Wasn't
your
that just my remark?
Your margin for error every night is
absolutely
very
zero.
Didn't you just twist my thing around?
No, well, basically.
Okay.
I don't mind doing that to you.
Let's go back to Dallas, LA. That's what you know about.
Well, Dallas is still a club that is one of those teams where you kind of expect that next step this year with the pieces that they added to that hockey club. And that's been a really slow development.
Well, and Hemsky was a healthy scratch.
Healthy X, yeah.
So there's one of the pieces that didn't quite come into the puzzle and work.
Now, they picked up a win. They got it back to break even, but I expected more out of the Dallas Stars early on.
Well, the back-to-back trades, 2 years in a row, getting Sagan and Spezza. And let's, you know, Sagan, they did give up some decent stuff for, let's face it, but that was still a great trade their way. But the one deal doesn't make 23 players instantaneously better. They're in a very difficult conference. And I think when you start breaking down, you realize it's a pretty ordinary lineup. And that's why Jim Neal got the job in the first place. They've been through a few general managers, too. They didn't really give Joe Nieuwendyk all that fair shake as well. And when you keep doing that, flipping it over and changing coaches and that, it's hard to do all those 180s all the time. You mentioned some examples that have been successful already. They're an example of, you know, maybe you would have been better off to stay the course with Gullitson or somebody like that.
They added a second line. It wasn't like they tweaked everything, but they added two guys who had played together for the final third of the season last year, who had some chemistry, and that hasn't translated with Spets and Hemsky.
No, and Spets is -8. Hemsky's -7 with one assist. Mm-hmm. So that's absolutely brutal. And as we mentioned, a healthy scratch. And that second line didn't really survive too long because all of a sudden they put Spets up with Ben and Sagan to have a power line. But once you get past their top four, there's a huge drop-off in terms of productivity.
Coming up on American Thanksgiving very soon, and that's always the measuring stick of whether or not you're in a playoff position, because it's very rare that if you're out at American Thanksgiving, this isn't analytics, this is just...
It's fact.
It's been talked about for years.
And it's out by 4 points. Like, if you're beyond 4 points, it's unattainable by and large.
So if the Leafs had Kyle Dubas last year at Thanksgiving when they were in a playoff spot, analytically, they would be in the playoffs?
Last year
was one of the few anomalies.
Last year was the most movement we've seen in recent memory for teams being able to jump and get back in, or in the Leafs' case, fall out. But right now you've got teams like Boston. Okay, well, they're fighting the injury bug. They're in. But right now they're on the outside looking in. What is Detroit? What are the Rangers? What are the Flyers? New Jersey? They're a team that you're not really sure what they are right now.
Well, but the big one you say is, what is Detroit? Because last year they proved at the end of the day they had what it took through all the injuries to make the playoffs at the expense of, say, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We marvel about their system, their scenario, the ability to replenish, the Nyquist of the world, but maybe that's where my Mike Babcock is looking at options at the end of the season, and maybe that's why the Detroit Red Wings, despite the fact there's been a number discussed, are also saying we're open to look at options at the end of the season. Whether, I'm not saying it's a blunt end of an era, but they've been, let's say, treading water in a good way, but compared to winning Stanley Cups, they've been kind of a Midland to a better than Midland team for a while.
Rangers have been inconsistent. Devils, they're not your grandfather's Devils.
No.
Anymore.
Or your father's Devils.
Or your father's Devils.
Yeah.
They're your Jaromir Jagr's Devils.
Yes. They give up a ton of goals, or can give up a ton of goals, and they've had those crazy kind of nights. There's just a lot of teams that are in that pack. And I guess it's who gets hot or who can figure it out at the right time. But there's a handful of teams that are just, I don't think there's, well, who would you say, for instance, in the Eastern Conference is head and shoulders above the rest? Pittsburgh. And that's it. Well, Montreal's got the record, but
yeah, and Tampa had the record too for a bit.
I like their team a lot, but
Boston should be. I mean, you always thought Boston and Pittsburgh were the two dominant teams in the East, and it does just seem like, yeah, it just seems like it's Pittsburgh right now.
Yeah.
Where in the West, you know, more in the West, like a team like Colorado surprised me, because they're supposed to be, they're a young team that made great strides last year, and it would be a huge disappointment to have a step back after all they did last year. So that would be one that's a surprise right now.
Parity in the National Hockey League. Gary Bettman loves it, talks about it all the time. Gary watches the show almost on a daily basis from his office in New York. And he loves what he's seeing right now. Well, close games, lead changes. It's carried over from the playoffs last year, where multiple goal deficits can be erased. But I don't think, I mean, it's as even as I've seen it in a long, long time. As far as a lack of bottom feeders, that's what you talk about, teams that are head and shoulders above anybody else. Mm-hmm. But you also, in the same realm, there's always been those three or four, five or six teams that are just so much worse than everybody else. Right now, Buffalo, Columbus is a better team than they're playing.
Yeah, they're decimated.
They're still, the record's terrible, but they don't have anybody to play right now. And more on that with Aaron Portsline coming up with the Columbus Dispatch.
Injuries aren't an excuse, but sometimes they're a reason.
Yeah.
And it's a reason.
You just come up with that?
No, I've had that one for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
You're sitting on it?
Just drag it out for a Hall of Fame weekend. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that, but now I got... But the other one, Florida, that's going to be an ordeal. That's 1 year too many to be an ordeal of picking first overall or where you're drafting. And that's what Gary Bettman in the NHL want to avoid, that someone who's out of the playoffs by Thanksgiving and don't sell out or come close to selling out when they don't have a good team. That's going to be a long season.
Matty just telling me in my ear, first to 12th in the East is a 6-point difference, and first to 11th in the West is a 9-point 9 points in the East. And what is it in the West? First to 11th, 9 points. Incredible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. He can put his shoes on back now that he's done all the counting.
he's figuring out East and West, too.
Yeah, that's double dipping.
Forget the arithmetic.
Yes.
It's the East and the West.
Struggles in geography as well.
But it's all about selling hope, and we've had some great races, and that's a terrific thing.
I do miss really good teams, though.
Dynasties?
Yeah. Well, that team that rolls through on a 3 to 4 year cycle where you just know that they are so much better than the rest of the league. And you got to accept that some teams aren't going to have a shot at winning because of that. But there was just something about when the Oilers rolled through town, when the Penguins rolled through town in that early 90s era. It's just
the old Islanders, the old Canadians, Canadians especially.
But the cap world, though, even though we still have the New England Patriots, for example, or the LA Lakers up till a couple of years ago, you know, in cap systems, different cap systems, could be a dominant team. And I've brought this one up many times. Nobody else seems to like it, but it was actually Bob Goodenow who mentioned it when the lockout was going on, and he was anti-cap. He didn't want a cap, to say the least. But when it was becoming when he was getting resigned to, that's the way it was going to go, he had the idea, exactly what you say, that, okay, if you have a cap, shouldn't teams that succeed be rewarded? Because fans want to see, they don't want the LA Kings to have to get rid of a player the next day, that you should get for a 1 year, you should get a bump in the cap, like $5-6 million, something like that. The team that makes it to the finals should get a bump in the cap, the two conference finalists, some kind of bump in the cap so you can keep your team together the next year. Like it's also an achievement. It's something to play for. And I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't think it's a bad idea at all. Rather, you know, to reward teams for their excellence, unlike the Chicago Blackhawks having to say, oh my God, we got to get rid of guys.
I hadn't heard that. Had you heard that before?
I vaguely remember back during the negotiations, that concept being thrown out there that, yeah, you didn't want to punish teams that were successful. And we obviously saw it coming out of it with Chicago when they won. We're seeing it to a degree this year with Boston. With the moves they had to make coming out of training camp. You know, Larry Brooks at the New York Post had a piece on the weekend about with the Canadian dollar being, well, it's up a few basis points today.
According to Darren.
Well, check that one out.
Okay.
We'll have to confirm that one. But with it being
flat, the dollar
at least,
right now,
and down from where it was, that maybe the cap is going to be a little bit stagnant, and that's going to challenge some of those cap teams that have to re-sign some players and whatnot. So again, you're punished. But then on the flip side of all that, excuse me, is something you brought up the other day, is rewarding the teams with the first pick overall. Yeah. What should the percentage points be there in terms of when you get into that lottery? Should it be more? Should you, because you fail every year, should you get rewarded with that top pick?
Well, you know, you're right. It's asked backwards in that, okay, if you
don't
fail.
Don't swear on the air, Gordon.
You put the word together. It's a good verb. But if you fail, you're rewarded with something extreme. If you succeed, they don't cut you a break. And the reason was also that, let's face it, Gary Bettman didn't want a cap with any finagling. He didn't want like the Larry Bird exemption and all that kind. He just wanted a cap. Was the cap. Let's not be able to circumvent it. And that's why, because it would have been more dollars, but on the table. But I like the concept.
Okay, so I'm. Well, you guys are talking there. I'm going through.
I heard you
like, with the geniuses behind the glass.
Genius with a J.
Yeah. What's the dollar today? It looks like it's down. It looks like it's down.
Did he give it to you in pounds sterling?
No. So I asked him. I said, "How much up or down?" It's 88 cents. You have no idea how much it's up or down, do you? No.
88.00? Why doesn't do the business report? He's focused on this show.
It's green or red. It looks like it's down, was the answer.
Well, give him the website.
I think he's got it.
And I don't know.
You know the best part is? There's two of them working on it.
What, they're both business guys?
I wouldn't say that.
They're both sweating profusely.
If there's a financial advisor listening to the program, we've got two people.
Call in.
Two candidates for potential clients right here. When we continue, Aaron Porchline, he's having trouble finding the rink in Philadelphia right now. We're going to try and track him down and get the latest on
the
Columbus
rink move?
Blue Jackets.
We got to ask.
No,
him.
I don't think so. But he's having some difficulties.
Okay.
So hopefully he's in a spot where he can talk to us. Oh, it is down. But how much? Oh, look at how happy he was. Now he doesn't know. A cent. A full cent.
He rounds it off. That'd be a great financial planner.
Oh.
Yeah, you may be good to retire at 62 or maybe 81.
Can we get 680 News yeah. on Honestly, the line here?
He was so happy when he figured out that it was down. Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. They've got the All-Star game this year. A lot of excitement around what's going to happen that weekend, but they got to get the hockey team going in the right direction and get healthier. An update on that. And Nathan Horton, whether or not... we've seen the last of the forward for the Columbus Blue Jackets in the National Hockey League because of injury. It's Hockey Central at noon. Looking for some financial advice on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet 360.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, simulcast on Sportsnet. Yes, you're going to need a headset. Darren Millard along with Gordy Stellick and Scott Morrison in the studio today. Aaron Portsline coming up in just a moment.
What do you want to say?
No,
I should have figured out what the dollar's doing.
Yeah.
He was rounding it. He was rounding it up or down.
Well, it's not part of his job description. And well, like, he's not Entertainment Tonight and the Business Network and, you know, all this stuff in Matt's defense.
But now that we've lost the pennies in our economy, mm-hmm. everybody rounds.
Yeah.
So we, in his defense.
Have you guys been ripped off on that?
No.
Where somebody's gone the other way on you when they're giving back change?
You mean you watch it like that intently that to say if it's 93 or whatever like
no, if it's $7.42 it should be $7.40.
That's correct.
And I've been charged $7.45.
Oh, I don't. My dad would have watched you that.
That's 5 cents.
No, that's the 3 cent. Oh, that's a 5 cent ripoff. Yeah,
yeah,
that's correct.
Do you know
Thank
how
you.
Copper wire was invented? It was Darren wrestling over a penny?
Aaron Portsline coming up in just a moment. Time for the three stars. Boom. We're going to get some music for this, too. Just to jazz it up a little
Better
bit.
Better than the boomp you just did.
Yeah. Something with a little more edge to it.
Boom.
Blake Wheeler from the Winnipeg Jets. A couple of goals last night. They win again. The Winnipeg Jets in a playoff spot right now. They've been getting it done with defense. But last night, the Stars stepped up, and the Winnipeg Jets with a 3-1 win over the Carolina Hurricanes. And things going very good. Things going as well as we've seen from the start of a season perspective for the Winnipeg Jets since they moved from Atlanta. So Blake Wheeler scoring a couple for the Winnipeg Jets. Gordy?
Yeah, who would have thought that, you know, Dale Weiss-Weiss compared to Steven Weiss-Weiss, whatever, mm-hmm. the better pickup last year. And I liked that last night. I didn't realize they only played about 8-plus minutes. But, boy, they used him well. 2 points, a goal assist, plus two. And also the hit, the physicality of it that, you know, the game that was figured out about Milan Lucic coming back to Montreal and all those other things. And, you know, the handshake line, he got nailed as a snitch, and he wasn't, right? That was the first thing Lucic said. Oh, if the guy's a big baby and he snitched that I spoke ill of him in the handshake line. And then he later said, no, I didn't pass that on to the media. But I thought he really showed up loaded for bear.
And he didn't play in the first meeting of the Bruins, so that, you know, the specter of what had happened last spring. And then he scored on that penalty shot goal, 5-hole, which I guess is his trademark. The players are all quite enjoying it on the bench and afterwards, so
just
good
a point.
On him.
When you only play 8 minutes and you're that productive, don't you question the coach why he wasn't playing more?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure that, no, wait a sec, the player does. Yeah, of course, yeah. They're human. We don't have to, but I'm sure they watch that stuff.
Like, coach, I've got it going on right now.
But sometimes players that fall into that spot on your roster, 8 minutes is what makes them productive.
Especially
when they're at their optimum.
In a game that
you play them more and they can become less.
They think, imagine what I can do if I played 16.
Guaranteed.
It's just human.
That's like you on the show here. You just
That's
want
right.
an extra hour.
If I can grab more airtime, think
better.
How productive
can
I can
give
add
the
to the show.
Star? Carey Lehtinen of the Dallas Stars. We talked about Dallas being a bit of a disappointment team this year. But
do you have the save from last
shutout
night?
Shutout last night, and that was the one. I mean, the early candidate, if you will, for the save of the year, and it was against your buddy, and our good friend Jarrett Stoll. But what a save. Just reaches out and snares it. Just unbelievable. Desperation, but he gets there and makes the save. It gets a shutout. 27 saves on the night. 2-0 Dallas win.
Look at the way Scott he described it for the radio listeners, huh? That desperation, the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's why the soliloquies are so good and everything. It's great. I feel like I'm on radio watching.
Desperation breeds brilliance. Here, Aaron Portsline, Columbus Dispatch, as the Columbus Blue Jackets getting set to try and turn the corner and bounce back and find a way to turn this season around. And it starts with you, my friend. Did you find the rink?
My God.
What happened?
Yeah. Actually, I never lost the rink. It was the cabbie who couldn't quite find the rink from Broad Street, if you can believe that. Anyways.
Are you okay, though?
Should have been 12. Yeah, I'm fine. It's always good to have a little confrontation in the morning before you come to the rink, because then you're ready for anything.
Did you get him to stop their meter?
No, he didn't. He would not stop the meter. So I did what I could do, which is I didn't tip him. And then when I got out, I left the back door open.
Well done.
No, you know, I have to admit, Aaron, that's something I would pull too. So I'm glad that there's two of us out there.
Passive aggressive rage.
Hey, you don't get locked in the back seat, right? We've had players that happens. You don't want to lose your anger that way.
Before we get too deep into Nathan Horton and the great piece that you had this week on his future and where he stands with his back, is there any positive news about the Columbus Blue Jackets getting healthier?
Well, I mean, it's they're getting Jack Johnson back tonight. That's not an injury. That's an NHL suspension. Mm-hmm. There's a chance Bobrovsky plays tomorrow at home against San Jose. There's a chance Anisimov is back tomorrow against the Sharks. There's a couple other guys on the horizon. Brandon Dubinsky seems to be on the horizon maybe at some point next week. But, you know, Ryan Murray is a long way out, week to week, not day to day. And Matt Calvert has apparently had a setback, so they're not going to be 100% for a while now, if they are at any point this season.
You know, now Darren was alluding to the article on Nathan Horton, and boy, pretty a compelling read. He says he feels like a 75-year-old and talking about having to consider career-ending type surgery. And maybe, you know, give us a little background what you wrote about, but I'm also curious. He arrived as damaged goods, not surprised damaged goods. They were well aware of the problem, but are they wondering now exactly what his physical health situation was when he signed on?
Well, I mean, they knew what his situation was regarding the shoulder, and they knew he needed to have what was pretty major shoulder surgery. But there were no indications at that point, either for Columbus or the Boston Bruins, who, of course, had the player and knew of his medical situation and extended him a contract as well, contract offer, I should say. There was no sign at that point that he had a back injury that could end his career early. In fact, he said he had the typical stiffness that some guys have after tough games, after you get cross-checked, after a hit, these sort of things. But nothing that lingered, nothing that made him think his career would end early because of a back injury. Nobody could have seen this coming, and it's something that's popped up just in the last year and a half and gotten to the point where he's not sure if he can go on.
Is it a situation, Aaron, that, like, could surgery solve the problem, or is it just beyond repair?
Well, that's the tough part here. He's in agony right now. He can't sleep. He can't do anything, play with his kids, any of these things. And yet, the answer for this, the way to get relief from the pain is to have surgery. But if he has surgery, his career is over at the age of 29 years old. So he's in a very difficult spot now where he's putting up the pain. He is enduring, and he's waiting as long as he can possibly wait to get the surgery in the hope, the faint hope of a miracle, some form of self-healing within the back, which it does happen. No doctor would tell you to expect it, but there have been times I've talked to people who've had a similar affliction where, for no reason, no medical reason, either the brain shuts off pain receptors from the area, or the back somehow adjusts to a point where nerves aren't as exposed, that pain does become tolerable. But it, you know, this is probably the best hope, and it is sadly at this point not much hope within there.
Aaron Porchline is with us from the Columbus Dispatch discussing the future for Nathan Horton. So what's the percentage, Ed? Did he give you any type of numbers about the potential that his career is over or not?
Well, no numbers, nothing like that. But I have to say I have not found anybody that's even mildly optimistic. It's almost talked about and whispered about in with a very unfortunate tone. Even Nathan himself was, you know, this is a guy, if you've ever dealt with him, he's always smiling. He's always in a good mood. He always thanks you for interviewing him, even the guy that's won the Stanley Cup. And you know, he's played 700 NHL games. It usually doesn't work that way. It's such a happy-go-lucky guy, a big kid. But even he is having a hard time smiling through this, because I think the sense from most people is that his career is almost certainly over.
Well, I just want to read that one quote telling Aaron, I can't stand up like a normal person. I can't bend over. I can't run. I can't play with my kids. I can't get in another car. I'm like a 75-year-old man, so slow and stiff. I can't sleep at night. I try to lay down and my back seizes up, and I can't move, so sleeping's out. I'm like a zombie in the daytime.
And that's what I wonder, Aaron. You articulated the faint hope clause of what maybe could happen, and we're all playing amateur doctor here trying to figure out, is there a precedent that's happened? Is there any other athlete that had something comparable and was able to come back to play? Are they able to throw that out there?
I don't know anyone who has faced a situation where they need three or four vertebrae fused in the lower part of their back and has continued to play. Now, hockey is a different animal. Football would be a different animal. I'm sure, I mean, Peyton Manning had an issue with his neck. Now, we're talking obviously much higher up, not in the support level of the spine. It's not the lower back where everything is sort of, that's where the fulcrum of your all of your movement is housed. So I don't know that there are any, obviously people have had back surgeries. Mario Lemieux had terrible back pain and continued to play. Couldn't even tie his own skates at some points late in his career. But I think everyone's back is a little bit different. This is a case right now where, I mean, he's not able to live a normal life away from the rink, much less suit up and play a game.
Is there any hope for this team this season, do you think? What's the mood with this group? They have to be devastated.
I mean, they're trying to keep a stiff upper lip here. And, you know, they were 5-10 last year. They're 4-10-1 now. They made the playoffs last year. What's different, of course, is last year they had to get their act together in terms of, you know, performance with the healthy players. This year they got to get the bodies back. I don't think they've lost hope. I still think they feel like they can compete in the Metropolitan Division. But I think there is a real keen sense that it, as they say, getting late early here, and something's going to have to turn around here pretty quickly. It, you know, even as banged up as they are, you can't justify a 9-game losing streak. They needed to get some points here. This can't continue. They go into tonight's game at Philadelphia trying to avoid a 10-game losing streak, and that's hard to imagine, you know, if this goes on too much longer, that they're going to be able to salvage this.
Sportsline follows up a great piece on Nathan Horton in the Columbus Dispatch this week by getting even with the taxi driver who wouldn't shut off the meter. It's been an eventful week, and a great job on the reporting end of it. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Aaron Porchline from the Columbus Dispatch. We're finger cooking lunch today. We ordered online at bostonpizza.com. Over 100 delivery items to choose from at Boston Pizza. Enjoy that, gentlemen. Who's going first today?
Oh, Gordy will be there.
Yeah.
I thought you had something to say. No, Boston, I gotta smarten up. I'll go third, but I'll be there.
Vancouver against Arizona tonight at 10 o'clock. And, of course, Hockey Night in Canada tomorrow. Hockey Central preview show tomorrow on Sportsnet 360. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll talk to you again on Monday.